So, welcome to today's podcast. My name is Pearlie Brewer, and I will be your host. Today's podcast guest is Robin Condon, who's the Director of Wellbeing and Total Rewards at NB Power. Today's topic is psychological safety in the workplace. Not a topic, really, that unfortunately we don't talk very much about. So we want to welcome you, Robin, to our podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
For folks who've never met you, I was fortunate. I went on LinkedIn a couple weeks ago and looked at your background. Very, very impressive. Why don't you give us, for folks that haven't met you, a look-see, a summary of what your experience is?
Sure. Thank you for that. So my background is I'm a registered nurse in the province of New Brunswick, and I have been for almost 30 years. And shortly after graduation, I specialized in occupational health. So I'm an occupational health nursing specialist with the Canadian Nursing Association. And then after a number of years of working in the field, I became a CRSP. So I'm also a Canadian Registered Safety Specialist. And my background has almost extensively been in energy. I worked at Point Lepreau for many years. I did a few years with one of the pipelines. And currently I'm at the role of a corporate leader within people and culture under human resources at NB Power.
Now, for folks, again, that may not be familiar, what's an occupational health nurse do in most organizations?
So there's kind of two different roles that occupational health nurses would do in an organization. One would be at the delivery end of health services for employees. And you typically see them in maybe high-risk industries or where physical or medical requirements are in place. So policemen, for example, probably have physicals that they have to do. And perhaps, you know, local jurisdictions will have a nurse, an occupational health nurse that helps. Some jurisdictions may also have a lot of people that are pilots or work on boats and require regular color vision. So the delivery end of services that you'll see in some occupational health services would be delivered by an OCH health nurse. But OCH health nurses also work strategically. So they may work in an organization in government, perhaps delivering on policy, perhaps in health, delivering on helping with public health. And in our organization, we look after total health, which is health programs to ensure the health and wellness of our employees, and also on the disability management side. So if we have employees that are injured for personal reasons, or maybe they've had a workplace incident, we help with the rehabilitation and the return to work and any accommodation in the workplace, as well as all the benefits that would go with that.
Now, we were talking before the podcast, and you mentioned that the number of occupational health nurses in New Brunswick has declined.
I think it has. I'm no longer a member of the association, but we used to have a pretty healthy population in New Brunswick, and I'm not quite sure where it is now, but I don't tend to see those ladies and gentlemen the way that I used to. So it's
what do you think curious. That would be?
I don't know if it's the shortage of nurses that we are seeing in the province of New Brunswick, if it's the investment in nursing, because they're now a profession that's paid fairly well. And I know in some areas, paramedics do some of the work that maybe OCH health nurses might have done at the delivery level in the past. So I'm not entirely sure. Some organizations require an occupational health nurse because they have services. Like I'm thinking mining may still have occupational health nurses. Mm-hmm. And Irving may still have them too. I'm not sure.
Now, in addition to the, I guess you might call it traditional health and safety topics, you spent a considerable amount of time as well at Point Lepreau.
Yeah, I did. So I spent about 20 years at Point Lepreau.
So what kind of issues would you had to have addressed there that not the normal traditional ones, I guess, especially around radiation, a lot of those issues?
Yeah, I wouldn't have dealt from a health perspective. That was a non-issue. There weren't any special requirements around that at Point Lepreau. They have very mature systems and programs, and they would spend as much time on their conventional, quote-unquote, conventional safety as they may their radiological safety. Okay. I haven't worked there in a number of years, but They would have normal programs and services from the occupational health, like medical screening and vision screening and testing, you know, maybe lung capacity testing. I doubt that one, actually. Yeah. But some of the other tests, maybe vision testing and that kind of thing.
So really pretty advanced.
Pardon?
Pretty advanced.
Oh, they would, those nurses that deliver services would be delivering an annual program. Like they would have an annual program that would be predetermined, and they would deliver those services on an annual basis. Nothing out of the ordinary at all, I don't think.
Now, your position currently at NB Power, Do you describe what all that covers?
So currently at NB Power, I work in the areas of employee well-being. So those programs are preventative on the front end. So preventative programs would be employee health challenges, mental health services, employee and family assistance programs, employee physical, mental, and total health rewards programs at work, as well as all employee benefits. So the compensation, health and dental, medical coverage, long-term disability, short-term disability is all under my area. We also have the back end where an employee may be injured, you know, a snowmobile accident and they're off work for a period of time. We would help with the disability management of that claim or that case and then assist the worker back to the workplace in an accommodated role until they're fully functional and back to their regular role.
Now, again, before the podcast, we were talking about the changes in the workplace that have been occurring. So when it comes to the front end, a lot of the programs you provide at NB Power, I assume a lot of those are changing as your audience, as your future employees, what they look for when they look for a new employer. I would assume you're having to change your programs and what you offer for benefits and so on.
I think there are two things that are driving the changes in programs that we're seeing today. One is COVID-19. So, you know, post-pandemic, employees have suffered 2 or 3 years of a variety of health measures that may have included isolation from family and friends. We're very fortunate in that most of us have family and friends in New Brunswick. But if you think of newcomers to New Brunswick that were isolated during that period, it was very challenging for newcomers to New Brunswick or newcomers to Canada. So there's the mental health support to ensure that we all get better together. Mental health cases across New Brunswick and Canada have been on the increase over the last couple of years. So we do programs and services to support our employees. The other thing that is changing are the expectations or demands of the workforce. So as employees are retiring, they take certain values and expectations with them. And as new employees come into the workplace, they come in with new expectations and values that they want from their workplace.
Now, when you talk about COVID and the effect that it's had, and I mean, we've all been through it. We all talk about how it personally affected us. What kind of issues did you find you had to deal with your employees were bringing to you as an employer?
I would say one of the biggest challenges that we faced were services and mental health. We talked at the beginning about less nurses in OCHealth. Mm-hmm. Health. There's also less services maybe available right now for people seeking medical health support. And there's likely a backlog. There's a backlog in many health services right now in New Brunswick as a result of COVID-19 and the slowdown of services. So I would say one of the problems employees would bring to us is a lack of services. So we really tried to flex during that period of time and find alternate therapies that could help employees. And those are really individualized. So what might help one employee may not help another, but if we tried 2 or 3 things and one of them was effective, until we could get real professional services involved, that would be the big one. And I think our workplace, like any workplace, heard about, you know, increased depression or anxiety or feelings of isolation. And, you know, some people wanted to come back to the workplace early to, you know, have social connections. Other people were fearful to come back to the workplace because they'd been home for a period of time and were nervous about public health, you know, restrictions that might still be in the workplace. So we're like any other workplace in New Brunswick. We, you know, worked with our employees during those periods to offer services and right-size the workplace for employees that came back it was over a year ago now, including some workplace flexibility, which is extremely helpful for new employees as well that are really demanding some flexibility around how their workplace works from an hours perspective. We were all able to work remotely during COVID-19 for extended period of time, anywhere from 3 to 6 months, depending on the workplace. Our workplace didn't shut down because we couldn't. We are a utility that has to service New Brunswickers all the time to ensure reliability. But you know, we had to face some of the same things as other workplaces in New Brunswick did on getting people fully engaged and back in the workplace and, using technology and ensuring that we attract and retain the right or the best people for our workforce.
So today we specifically want to talk about psychological safety in the workplace. You've brought up a number of issues relative to that already. We're going to focus on, and this may be a little difficult for some folks to grasp that are listening to the podcast, but we want to focus on one of the CSA standards that's been developed that deals specifically with psychological safety in the workplace. For folks, again, that may not be familiar, do you want to go over what CSA's approach is, what they're known for, who they are?
Oh, certainly. So CSA, which is the Canadian Standards Council, is a group. It's a group of professionals. So the council actually has an entire body of professionals that work on a number of standards to ensure safety requirements in Canada are met. And some of these standards are legislated in that local jurisdictions like WorkSafe New Brunswick would adopt a CSA standard. And then when that's adopted into the standard legislation, then the workplaces in New Brunswick would have to meet the requirements of that standard. So you can think of lifting and hoists or fall protection or lock and tag out or respiratory protection. All of those CSA standards, or many of those CSA standards, are adopted into legislation, and then workplaces in New Brunswick must meet them. The CSA standard on psychological health and safety is an optional standard. It is not adopted into legislation, and it is what workplaces might use as a best practice guide to say, here's where we want to be, and then we're going to stage an approach to adopt the requirements within that psychological health and safety standard. It was developed by a number of specialists and council members from across Canada. It was a couple of years in development. And in 2013, I think, it was released for free, so it might still be out on the internet. And then after 2018, it was reaffirmed. And now that one you can purchase through the CSA login portal where you purchase any CSA standard.
Now, most folks are familiar with the topic you just mentioned when it comes to CSA electrical standards and so on. CSA also got involved back in, I think it was around, in the early 2000s, with what they called health and safety standards. Do you want to talk about those for a second?
So are you talking about the health and safety standards? Yeah, that talk about the health and safety management system.
Management system.
Yeah, so there have been a number, I'm not sure if they're all out yet, a number or a suite of health and safety standards that help workplaces that are optional, best practices, and they help workplaces build their health and safety management system. So they include training and qualification and recertification. I'm not sure what the other ones are. That was the one that comes to mind.
The first one they developed was around health and safety program or health and safety system.
Management system, yeah.
Your management system, what should be in the system. Then they developed one on hazard identification, risk assessment.
And that has been adopted, I think, in almost all Canadian jurisdictions.
Yep. And that was a good standard.
And the feds, yeah.
And then they developed one on training. Yeah. A lot of folks were asking, well, what does a good training program, for example, on health and safety look like?
Yeah.
So they developed one there. Then they moved into psychological health and safety. Now, you mentioned CSA committees. Do you want to, sort of for folks that may not have been exposed to those committees, how big are those kinds of committees? Who's on them?
Yeah.
Do they represent the cross-section or not?
So typically, though, I've only been involved in one committee, and how it worked is that there were specialists from across Canada that were nominated to that committee, and then they were selected. The committee met twice a year, and they would meet twice a year all the time to ensure that that standard was maintained. It would have a cross-section of people representing different areas of Canada, different industries in Canada, and stakeholders. So it may not be someone that's a specialist in that standard, but it may be a stakeholder. And then they would meet every 6 months to review their standard. They may have gone to once a year with COVID. And then every few years, they would update or reaffirm that standard, and you'd get a new one. So it's very important to remember that when they're reaffirmed, you may have to go back and look at your safety management system and say, are we still accurate with this best standard? And if it's not legislated, meaning they didn't update the legislation to agree with that same standard, you may be adopting a best practice, and you may be beyond the legislative requirement.
Okay. Psychological safety in the workplace, what is it? How would you define it?
So there's a number of definitions out there, and the term was originally coined by the Harvard psychologist It's going to take me a second. I'm going to look up his name.
Amy Edmonston.
Yeah, just give me a second. I should have been keeping up.
That's opt-in quoted.
A lot of editing right now. So yeah, it was originally coined by the Harvard Business School professor Amy Edmonds. She's done a lot of work in not only psychological health and safety, but I think human performance. And she defined it as a belief that no one will be punished or humiliated for speaking up with ideas, questions, concerns, or mistakes. And I think of an environment, maybe it's a really high-risk environment, maybe there's a lot of activity going on, where I'm thinking of maybe a paramedic or a nurse in a situation where there's really high stakes going on, where you can just speak up and say, I made a mistake. And I'm using nursing as one of the things that I would draw on, because if you've made a mistake, you want to be able to say, I've made a mistake, we have to go fix something. Because it may involve patient safety, or it may involve public safety, or it may involve something. So those industries really need to be able to feel safe in bringing problems forward in order to create a continuous learning environment so that we can all get better together. And for high-risk industries, it's absolutely critical that we do not reprimand someone or blame them for a mistake.
Okay. Now, what workplace factors come into play in developing a psychological health and safety workplace?
So I think that in order to right-size the program for your work environment, you really need to start off with a risk assessment. What psychological risks are in my company? And some of those risks will be very individual to the company, but some of them are generic. And one of the high stakes risks for me is working with the public. So someone that's working with the public is in an environment that can't always be controlled, because you never know how the public might react. And a member of the public may be extremely disrespectful to somebody on the front lines. So that's a high risk organization. Also, working in an area with high stress demands, like a lot of timelines, where something has to be done every half hour, or you need to check in every hour, or there's a pace where a deadline is in front of you all the time, is another area where it's psychologically stressful. An area where there isn't a lot of control for the employee is another risk factor, as well as leadership capacity. So if you're in an organization with limited leadership capacity, that can be stressful for individuals working there, because they never know what they're going to get. But if you have a empathetic, understanding, listening leader, you're probably going to have a more open environment or culture that will allow people to come forward and talk to you or admit to mistakes or errors that may have happened.
Now, if you look at current environment compared to 10, 20 years ago, people would suggest that we're living in a lot more stressful environment today than we would have been, say, 10, 20 years ago. We continually hear people talking about multitasking, so much more expectation-wise. Organizations have cut back, creating a whole lot more stress on the worker. Do you think this has had a negative effect on the worker itself from a psychological point of view?
It's interesting, because I spoke to someone on my team about this just last week, and I think, yes, I think workplaces have a lot more demands on them. There's a lot of expectations. Workplaces have to be everything to a lot of people. You know, keep up with the market and make sure your brand is good, and be psychologically safe, be physically safe. There's just a lot of demands on people. And some people ended up with more than one set of responsibilities. Maybe they don't have clear roles. But the other thing that I think about is the incoming stimulation all the time. So when anyone's at work, they've got their computer going, they might have their cell phone going, they've probably got Teams going, they may have in-person meetings going. So there's a lot going on throughout the workday in any workplace. But then when you go home, I think people don't disconnect either. They're on, you know, Facebook, or they're on other things, and the incoming all the time never allows your brain to have a big enough rest to allow it to reset in order for you to be healthy. And one of the healthy things that you need is downtime, and it could be meditation, it could be yoga, But that downtime allows the brain to rest enough that it can go back at it the next day. And I think that the combination of our personal lives being very busy and our work lives being very busy doesn't allow people to have the downtime to rest and reset in the way that they need to be performing again the next day. I was talking to a dad today, and he was talking about his hockey schedule. And I was exhausted. I was like, oh my goodness, your hockey schedule is as crazy as my work schedule. So, but this man also has a full-time job, and he has a home, and he has, you know, he has a lot of commitments. And when you think about that, it's a lot. I was talking to a parent about hockey last week, and he said with his grandchildren, they run every day. And he said, I only ran my kids twice a week. Yeah. And so the hockey schedule is higher than it used to be, or volleyball or whatever. So I think that just the pace is really a lot right now.
Now, when it comes to the workday, when you have those people that are just so connected to the computer and the cell phone and people popping in their office and everything else, what other advice would you give to them on how to control that? Like, I know it's great you talk about, you know, meditation and all these sorts of things folks can do, but what sort of practical advice would you give to someone that says, look, it's just crazy at work. You know, I've got my computer on responding to mails. Maybe I'm on a meeting, but my cell phone's going off, and we know those are going off day and night. I've got people coming to my door. I've got so many demands. What can I do?
Yeah.
Practical advice.
I think it's a great question, and I think it's going to be a personal response. But first of all, I think it's control. So control over your calendar as much as possible. Like, we all have workplaces and we all have bosses, and we don't all have complete control of our work environment, but controlling what we can control. Also taking out white space in your calendar. So maybe booking an hour every second day so that nobody can book over that time. And then that allows white space for you to disconnect and think. So the other thing of not being completely at rest is if you never reset your thinking, you're just running on adrenaline, your output isn't as good, your decisions aren't as good, your thinking isn't as clear. So I think putting white space in the calendar is helpful. I also think that setting reasonable expectations. So I work with someone who was on a project, and she had kind of put her out of office on during the project. And she said, I just can't have people think that I'm going to get back to them this week because I'm full time on this project and I just want them to know. So I think open, honest feedback and information on expectation and what's reasonable. So if everyone thinks you can get back to them 10 minutes, that might not be reasonable. So I think it's setting clear expectations on what service you could deliver to, you know, a customer or a coworker or even your boss.
Now, when you talk about psychological safety in the workplace, one of the terms that's in the CSA standard, they talk about safe connections. What do they mean by safe connections?
So safe connections, and it was really, I think it was in my implementation plan. Safe connections are creating a safe space for employees to be themselves and also to have friendships within the workplace. Now, I'm not saying best friends where you hang out all the time, but safe connections where you can be yourself, you can voice yourself in a respectful way, is one of the ways that we can connect. The other thing I think is really important for leaders is to create the safe connections with their team. And that's having an open door policy, allowing employees to tell you things and you keep it confidential, giving employees the space to have a voice. And that voice may be feedback, it may be a survey, it may be a group meeting where they share their opinions, experiences, or relevant information on a topic, or maybe an employee gives you feedback on what we need to fix, and we fix and adjust based on that feedback.
Now, one word you used, or a couple words you used a minute ago, and that's sort of the open door policy. I'm sure if you brought that up to a lot of people, you're going to get the reaction was, oh yeah, my boss says he has an open door policy. The reality is nobody believes it, nobody accepts it, nobody wants to go there because, you know, that's not the reality. How do you answer a question like that?
So I think that you can't just say you have an open door policy. I think you have to exhibit that you have an open door policy. And I think that you can't say that you do a lot of things. I think you have to demonstrate that you do them. So if you say, I have an open door policy and your door is closed every day, then you actually don't. And what it creates is distrust in what you're saying. So I say I have an open door policy, but my door is closed, then you're going to lose credibility and people aren't going to trust that. But if you keep an open door, maybe I mean, there are meetings where you have to keep your door shut, but if you say you have an open door policy, you have to follow up with an action. Mm-hmm. And if you say, I want to hear your feedback, and someone gives you negative feedback, then you have to embrace it. But you can't get defensive and say, oh, I don't like your feedback. So I think it's really about show me, not tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the benefits of a psychological and healthy and safe workplace.
So I think the benefits of a healthy psychological workplace includes all of the things that we started to talk about at the beginning, which is higher employee attraction and retention. I think it fosters an inclusive workplace culture. It creates a reporting culture and ensures that safety incidents are reported and resolved. So remember, this is a safety standard. So what is the implication to safety? And one of the implications for a psychologically safe workplace is employees feel confident, comfortable reporting incidents so that they will be fairly investigated and then corrected. That's one of the enhancements that I can see. It encourages creativity and new ideas, and it avoids some of the groupthink. It improves employee well-being. It creates a brand ambassador for your company. So I was in a meeting a few weeks ago and we were talking about, and this was a meeting outside of MB Power, so it had nothing to do with MB Power, but we were talking about, we can't control what people say about us at this particular company. And it's absolutely true. We can't control what people say about us, but we do have to have brand ambassadors. So most people are saying the same thing about us, which is we're a good company. We're a good employer. We're good to the environment. So we have to create that so that people will be telling our story. It also reduces employee turnover and it boosts team performance and output.
Okay. So there really is quite a benefit to a good psychological, healthy, and safe workplace.
Yeah.
Now, how do you convince a workplace that hasn't been on their radar, that it should be on their radar?
So I think that the workplace would have to look at themselves and what does their experience tell them? So is there a conflict in the workplace that you need to resolve? Are there issues that don't get resolved and could be resolved with open dialogue? Are you in a workplace that's at high risk for your employees? Some of the items that we discussed at the beginning, you know, working with the public or disclarity within roles and responsibilities. What are the issues that organization might be struggling with that having a sound, healthy psychological safety program in the form of respect and diversity and inclusion, what could they benefit from based on what problems they're seeing? And maybe it's turnover. Maybe they're having a lot of turnover and they don't understand why. But if they dug in, they may understand that maybe the workplace isn't very inclusive or perhaps it's not very respectful. So I think each workplace has to dig into what benefits would they see based on the issues and problems they may be experiencing.
Now, in the CSA standard, talks about building trust and connection. And there's 7 different items that it talks about. The first one is what they call breaking the golden rule.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
So breaking the golden rule for me is, so the golden rule is treat others as you would want to be treated yourself. And I think we don't know what other standards are for being treated well. So if you break the golden rule and treat others even better than you anticipate or expect to be treated yourself, then you'll probably hit the right note on how you should be treating other people.
Okay. Second one is welcome curiosity.
Yeah, welcome curiosity is about being a better listener, listening to really understand what the person is saying, question them, so that you're not making assumptions about what they're saying, and don't be thinking about your response. So I think some people listen with the idea of how I'm going to respond, when we should really be listening with curiosity to understand what the other person is really trying to say.
Okay. Promote healthy conflict. Now that sounds like a strange one.
I know it is, and I probably should have worded that a little bit differently. So what I would say is promote healthy debate. So I talked about groupthink a minute ago, where we all think a little bit differently. So if everybody agrees all the time with everything, you might have groupthink. And then you might want to be considering creating some healthy debate and asking someone to be the black hat to poke a hole in it. Because healthy debate gives you a better product, because you've looked at that thing from many angles. And the product may be a service. The product may be a program. The product may be a procedure, but you will get a better product or procedure if you've invited healthy debate into it, because if you put it out, you're only going to get the debate anyway. So you might as well get it before you put it out.
Now, we live in a society where if you're on the internet, you're continuing to hear this word woke.
Yes.
We're in a woke society.
Woke society.
That seems to be in conflict with what you're saying here.
So I think that woke to me is I am open and aware and now very tuned into the other person. Yes. So for me, woke is I have a better understanding of, and for me it tends to be cultural, but I have a better understanding of your cultural expectations, or I have a better understanding of your cultural norm, or I now am not so unconscious about what I was doing. I'm woke and I'm thinking about you in a different way.
Okay.
So to me, woke is really about, I was kind of blind to everything. I was just walking through life thinking everybody was exactly like me. And now I'm kind of alert to the fact that they're not. Everybody is very different than me. And being respectful and curious about what that other person is bringing.
Now, you'll hear people say that we live in a society where we seem to be seeing a lot of this belief that we have to agree with the norm. What you're suggesting here, not so much necessarily, that maybe we should be questioning the norm. Is that the case or not?
Yeah, and that's an interesting question I hadn't thought about. So I think the norm doesn't work for everybody. And when you say that, I go back to grade 5 and being marked on the bell curve for the math class. And are we marking people on a bell curve? I don't know if we are, mm-hmm. but is that fair? Is that a reasonable process?
Yeah.
Is the norm really based on everyone's perceptions or a few people's perceptions? So it is a really interesting question that I think we each have to ask ourselves and say, what is the norm and what does it mean and how did we get there? And do we need to reestablish what that might be? Is it more? Is it less? I'm not quite sure what the norm might mean, but for me, it's always a bell curve.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, somebody's on one end of the bell curve or the other. So are we all in the middle? I don't know.
The next item, building trust. How do you build trust?
I think building trust by saying and doing the same thing. So the open door policy. So building trust is saying I have an open door policy and then demonstrating that I have an open door policy by having an open door. It's also building trust is not judging someone else for something they might say. And building trust is allowing others to be themselves, not reprimanding people for something that, blaming someone for something. And building trust takes a long time, and you can only do it through actions. You can't do it through words, and through experiences. So if someone experiences you over time, you will build trust or you will build distrust. But it'll be solely based on the actions that you're providing at that time, and they assess it, and either they align or they don't align.
Now, your next one, give employees a voice. I have had bosses in the past who would say, oh boy, that's opening up a box of worms. I don't know if we want to go there. And what's your comment there?
I think there's a lot of people that think that. I had taken a job a few years ago and wanted to receive honest feedback from my group, and my group was extremely hesitant to give me honest feedback openly, which was fine. So I invited my boss in once a month to give me open feedback in front of the group. And the reason why I did that is I thought if they see my boss giving me open feedback in front of the group, that normalizes the behavior, it makes it acceptable. And I take the feedback and go, you know, thank you, I didn't know that. That was a blind spot. And then we started to give and receive feedback more openly. So I think it's, if you want feedback, invite it in, but you have to do something with the feedback. If you get feedback and ignore it, you'll stop getting feedback.
What about earning and extending trust?
Earning and extending trust. So I would extend trust to someone. So whenever I take over a new team, I extend trust to the entire team because I have no reason not to trust them. I trust that they know what they're doing. I trust that they'll deliver. I trust that they're competent. I trust that they've got the plan and they're going to execute the plan. So I extend that trust. And over a period of time, I will receive their trust once they realize that I'm doing what I say I'm going to do. So I think you have to give trust to people when you're in a leadership position, so that they know like that this person has empowered me. It's empowering to give trust.
Promoting effectiveness and not efficiency.
Yeah, effectiveness versus efficiency. So effectiveness is we're doing a quality job, and efficiency is we're doing 24 jobs. So if you want to get 24 widgets produced, then you'll want to be managing on time. But if you want 24 quality items, then you're going to be managing on quality. And they are not the same thing. And for me, it's really about the efficiency of the team will be built once they become more effective. So as a team, they'll become effective as they work together and they start to learn and grow and understand each other's strengths. And then they will become more efficient. But at the beginning, they probably aren't.
Thinking differently, not creatively.
So thinking differently and not creatively. So you and I may think differently on an item, meaning you think it's black and I think it's white. But creatively would be somebody thinks it's gray, and we're all right. So creatively is really innovation and thinking about something in a different way. Taking a lesson from one area of your life and applying it somewhere else is a creative approach to problem solving. And even from a safety perspective, if you think about something in an out-of-the-box way, it might be the right solution. But if you get groupthink going on, it makes it hard.
Do you think groupthink happens too much?
I think some organizations have more groupthink than others. I think it tends to be a cultural norm in some groups. And sometimes it can be really hard. In the Maritimes, we're very, very fraternal. We really like each other and we want to be friends with each other and we want to build those relationships. So it's probably not as natural. And we're also very flexible. If somebody says, I want to go to the movies, we're all going to go to the movies. And we don't tend to be disharmonious. That's just not who we are. We're very harmonious people. So I think it probably is a typical reaction in the Maritimes.
Look, Robin, there's still questions I want to ask. So what we're going to do here is we're going to cut off our podcast. We've been trying to keep our podcast for folks listening to roughly a half hour. That's sort of a chunk of time we feel folks can free up to listen to the podcast. And we're breaking our podcast up into two parts. So today, you've listened, folks, to part one of a two-part podcast with Robin, who's here from NB Power. So we're going to take a break and stop our recording here, and we'll pick it up in a few moments, and you'll be able to listen to part two of our podcast with Robin Collins.